Have you ever tried to laugh without smiling?
I've tried. I've tried to laugh. Like,
God, it's really
horrifying.
Really psychotic looking.
It looked like you were wearing a Michael Myers mask.
New for 96 with your hosts Kevin McCauley and Chris Nguyen.
We're back. It has been a second, but I've been busy rearranging my model car collection.
Yes, yes.
And you've been busy because you just acquired a brand new 2023 baby.
New for 23.
Infant of some kind.
Yeah.
Okay.
Correct.
And love the name, McDermott.
Yeah, his name is Dylan. He's a healthy boy. He's currently ruining my life.
Yeah.
Only for the next 18 years.
Yep, pretty much.
Yeah, so that's the life update.
That's the news.
For a lot of people.
That's all you get for the next 18 years in reference to this.
This is how several people will find out.
Yeah, including your parents.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So, well, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
What a thing.
You have a new addition as well.
I do have a new addition.
Yeah. You just couldn't let me have a newer E-Class than you.
No.
You couldn't let stand.
I had to one-up you somehow. So, yes. It has finally happened, folks.
Chris has bought a new daily driver after so much years of consternation.
This has literally been a topic of conversation on the podcast for at least 2 years.
And off the podcast.
What seems like even longer than
even
2 years.
Even longer, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically the next day after you bought the E63 wagon, you were like, okay.
What's next? Yeah. That was a certainly love-hate relationship with that car. Although I still miss it somewhat, the E63 wagon. But I have moved on, and as a recap, and here's where we go into about 3 hours of podcast content when I go through the list of cars I considered.
Yes.
But let's just say, I thought that I wanted an SUV of some kind, so I went from basically two ends of the spectrum, either like a sporty SUV, a Cayenne GTS / Turbo, or a Range Rover. And the Range Rover was winning out for a very long time. And I don't know how that was because, one, the reliability thing is actually a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And two...
You mean the lack of?
The lack of, if you
sure.
will.
Okay.
And the other part of that was I don't like big, bouncy cars. And it's really big and bouncy. I know some people like a big, bouncy car, but not me. So... And you rode in one. Do you remember when I was talking to you about the Range Rover Supercharged? It's like, 500 plus horsepower in a 6,000 pound body and, suspended in with air suspension. And when you floor it, it literally like points at the sky until you reach terminal velocity, basically. And through the rear window, all you see is the ground. And that's how softly sprung it is.
Mm-hmm.
Was I wrong? Because I took you for a test drive.
I think that's a bit extreme.
It was to the ground. Like, you saw more ground than you saw, like, cars in the rear view. I still like the idea of a Range Rover, and one day, I think an old Range Rover could be in the works still. But let us not keep people in suspense, because, again, we have tortured them for 2 years about what decision it was going to be. So, I happened to find a local Mercedes-Benz E53 AMG sedan.
The E53.
Yes.
It's actually a 5.2 liter. Is that
correct? It's a 5.295 liter engine. Yeah, so they rounded up to 53. So
the E53 was a car that we both learned existed 2 months ago.
It's kind of...
you purchased 1 month ago.
It's wild because...
It was such a straight shot from discovering this car, learning about it, getting kind of geeking out on the details, the technical aspects.
Yeah.
And then finding the right one and pulling the trigger. And you found one and you kind of looked at it and there was a little bit of back and forth for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Before you made the decision. But it's very cool. And I think if you explain. I think it makes a lot of sense for you because
here's the thing. Yeah, my criteria was that it needed to have some sort of suspension travel or just good suspension because we live on the surface of Mars, basically.
It is crumbling so much more every day. And then after this summer with no rain and 1,000-degree temperatures, it's like the pavement has
fissures,
just given up.
Tectonic plates colliding, like creating just, you know, mountainscapes. This is like no exaggeration. If you ever drive in the inner city of Houston, it is atrocious. And the E63 was an interesting car, but not a good one as far as like a daily driver went, especially in Houston. And it had such a crashy suspension. I describe it still as basically hard, harder, and bump stops as the three suspension modes. And anyways, I always felt like I was breaking the car every time I drove it. And I think it was probably the 911 has crasher suspension, but you know, this only moderately better. So I needed good suspension travel. I wanted something that was maybe a little more gas efficient, something that got more than 10, mm-hmm. which is what I got in this car, and something that was moderately interesting, moderately fast, I guess. That's why the Cayenne came in. The Cayenne was a really good proposition. It was a V8 still, because I like good sound, of course.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's wild because I literally went from making fun of the fact that Mercedes was making a 43, a 53, and a 63, and I had no idea what the other two were. And
no one does.
No one does. And I think a lot of people are learning about this now. Yeah.
No one should know.
People are learning about this now. So yeah, it started. Do you remember how it started? It was because I came across an E-Class coupe, a W213 E-Class coupe. I think it was an E400 and E450. And I wasn't even considering them, but they started to grow on me a little bit. They look really good, and they had really nice interior combinations, like that one that silver
like,
with
silver,
a
yeah, with like blue interior,
blue and cream. It looked so nice.
And that that W213 dash is so cool because it is like there's the open pore wood. There's so much of it. The wood isn't just a little trim. It is like a big surface area.
Yeah, big swath of wood, and it still holds up even though it dates back to like the mid 2010s S-Class, the design language for like the interior. But anyways, I started looking at like YouTube videos on the E-Class coupe because I didn't know anything about them, and then the dumb YouTube sidebar was recommending that I watch like things about the E43 and the E53, and I gave in, and I started watching those, and then I learned what the hell they were. And the 43 is a stopgap before they moved to the inline six. So that's just a turned-up turbo six that's in V6 that is in basically everything. It's the M276, which is the same engine designation as your car, even though yours is NA. And in 2018-19, they introduced the, I'm going to get this wrong, it's not 276, it's M256. It is the inline six. And I remember reading about the inline six, but I completely forgot that it was turbocharged, supercharged, and mildly electric assisted as well. And never would I have thought that I would have gone for a car like this, except that I also forgot that that's basically what the Defender is.
Oh, yeah.
Which is an inline six that is turbocharged, supercharged, and slightly electrically assisted. And anyways, I don't know like what happened, but like I started watching this and I started getting really interested in the tech because this mild hybrid system is really interesting. Like it's intended to provide like a little bit of infill for acceleration, say for instance. So if you're really on it, like it has like a 22 horsepower, they call it like an electric compressor, and it basically eliminates any sort of lag. And then at stops, it acts as a generator basically that keeps, it's basically like really good stop start. Like it can cut the engine while you're still moving as you're coming to a stop. So you can coast like from 10 miles an hour and under to a stop which, you know, at that point, like, it doesn't feel like the car is turned off at all. And when it starts up again, my car, my old E63 wagon, had like very early start-stop technology, and it was atrocious, especially because, like, it just didn't play well with the drivetrain of that car. Like, the transmission was not smooth, and for whatever reason, when it fired up, like, it just, like, shook, and it would judder and move a little bit. Mm-hmm. And in this car, like, as soon as you let go of the brake, like, the tach just spins up. It doesn't, like, start. It just, like, moves back up, and you're off and away. I do turn it off sometimes, but because it's not perfect. It works, like, I would say, like, it's 98% good, which is a lot better than most start-stop systems.
For sure.
So, anyways, this is all really boring. Here's the thing. It's a really good daily driver, and I can't believe I went this route, because, like you said, this happened within basically a month's time.
Yeah.
And you know how I obsess about, like, when I get into a car, the idea of a car, like the Cayenne, I went so deep into it. Like, it was like a year-long obsession of, like, finding the right one and thinking that this was the perfect car. And on a dime, I found this car. It was local, and it's badged an AMG, but it's really, my old E63 was more AMG than it was Mercedes, meaning that it was very sports oriented versus, like, being luxurious. And this is the other way around. It's a really nice, fairly luxurious car that is turned up a little bit when you want it to be. And it shares the suspension from the E63, the 213 E63, which I was really surprised, because it is very compliant on the softest setting. Like, it's still firm. Like, it's not, I test drove an E450, and that's very smooth down the road. This, you feel all the bumps, but they're very muted. And then when you actually turn up the suspension, and it has three modes, it basically, on the hardest mode, feels as hard as the comfort mode in the E63. And that I am good with. This is like a car that will never see a racetrack. It will never see, like, anything beyond, like, inner city streets. And so, but every once in a while, I do like to drive a little bit quickly. And this does give you enough. It's a Goldilocks car. It truly is. Like, it is, it's not too soft, so not too bouncy. It's not too hard, and it's not too slow. Also not, like, incredibly fast. I mean, it's an impossible car and driver, 0 to 60 in 3.9 seconds.
Oh, wow. That's fast.
It's fast. It's fast for, like, a normal car nowadays. I don't think I could ever get 0 to 60 in 3.9 seconds. And it can be tail happy if you really push it. So it's a 4MATIC Plus. Can you believe that we're talking about this and not, like, in, like, mocking with any tones, sense of irony? Yeah. So this car's 4MATIC Plus, which means that it can send all the power to the rear. So if you set it up just right, you can get the tail out on it, but it doesn't really want to do it, but you can get it to do it. So there you go. I won't prattle on about
it. Well, I will just a little bit, because this is a 2019. It has a warranty.
That's the most important
CPO
part.
It's warrantied, and you were stressing out about cars so much because without incriminating you, your E63 wagon was kind of a ticking clock of calamities that were headed your way. Potential calamities. Non-legally binding. You did not have exceptionally high repair bills possibly coming on every aspect of the vehicle.
Yeah.
But if you theoretically had, that was looming over you. So you had a time frame to replace that car, and you were looking and you found this car, not saying you rushed into it, but the idea of a car with a warranty, of a car that gave you 80% of the juice, not to mix metaphors with the juice worth the squeeze, which is a very funny metaphor, which I apply to everything now. But this gives you all of the feel, or 80% of the feels, with, like, complete peace.
Yeah.
You are at You take this stress out of your life of the wagon and the stress of another car and all the cars you were looking at, like a 2013 Cayenne GTS or Cayenne Turbo or
a Range Rover of any kind.
It would have been 2015, 16 at the newest, just, you know, sort of.
Or I was even looking at L322s, which are like 20-aughts cars.
Right. And so it's like, you would have a whole new laundry list of like stuff you have to fix, stuff you have to worry about, stuff you have to take care of. And it's not just about the expense. It's like taking a car across town, the time. Oh, they didn't do it right.
Wondering if it's going to start every time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wonder if it's going to break down somewhere.
And so a 2019 car that gives you everything that is highly discounted from its original MSRP because of the wonders of depreciation and no one wanting sedans in this country is very, very appealing.
Yeah.
And it has made your life better.
Here's the thing. I cannot believe how much joy I am deriving out of what is essentially a very normal car, but better than, like, a normal car that can do things when you want it to do things. Like, and the warranty is the best part of it all. And I cannot believe how much satisfaction I am getting out of knowing that if something breaks, like this is on full air suspension, if something breaks, it is covered under a 3-year CPO warranty. So
there's like 1 year left on the...
It's 1 year CPO, okay, and then right. I got a deal on an extra 2 years.
Okay.
I will likely not keep it for the full duration of the CPO warranty. However, that said, when in my car search, I really did think I needed to prove a point as far as, you know, it needs to be something really special and possibly life ruinous in terms of maintenance. And it just, that's where I get my satisfaction.
Well, you also, like, the E63 wagon is like one of the coolest cars. Like, as far as like cool car nerd cred, it doesn't get much cooler than that.
Yeah.
It's impossible to replace that or live up to that.
I know. That's the thing.
You can't let that dictate you. You have to choose for your own happiness.
I know. And I should say, like, you know, it's worth somewhat eulogizing that car because I didn't hate the car, but it was a high maintenance machine. And that's fine. I don't mind that. I mean, case in point, the other car. Mm-hmm. I didn't need two of those, one of those being my daily driver. And I really did, you know, I talked with you, should I just refurbish this car to basically new condition, the E63, and keep it? Because it is really special. But there were a few things, you know. One, it was in a P30 car, and the money I would have put into it would have gone, like, I could have bought like something with all the really expensive stuff already sorted out at that point.
Right.
And in a color combination that I would have actually wanted, because this was, as I like to refer to it, semen white over beige mm-hmm. and brown. And that was, it's one of my least liked color combinations. It's just one of those things where it's just really creamy. The whole car is just like creamy in and out, basically. And, I didn't really mean that to sound dirty, but...
I think you did.
Yeah. At the end of the day, I think I would have... I'd rather just buy a car that is essentially a long-term placeholder and just give myself some time to think about, like, what I really want. Like, if something is in long-term or just to try something different later on. But I don't have to stress about sinking a car's worth of money, an additional car's worth of money into making this car perfect.
Yeah. And so you traded in the wagon, which freed you from the guilt of like, hey, this might have, it may not have issues. It may have issues down the line, but it is not your problem. And it is laundered. This is the ethical way to do this. You would not have put this car on bat just because of, and fixing everything to make it 100% right would have been a huge pain. And it was really diminishing returns on like what the market was doing with them and everything.
Yeah, at this point, like basically what I ended up trading it for was just a little bit under what they were going for on bat. And at that point, the market's down right now for sure. Mm-hmm. And like at that point, especially, like it just made more sense to kind of cut my losses a little bit. So it's not a color. And it is missing the two features that I said I did not want to go without, which is stupid, but adaptive cruise and massaging seats. Mm-hmm. So it's missing these two dumb things, but it's fine. I'm making do. Like,
oh, good. I'm glad.
I'm making do. This, it has modern tech, and I cannot believe how much I like modern tech. Like, mm-hmm. I was a curmudgeon, admittedly, who thought like, oh, I can live without, you know, CarPlay, which actually I can. I don't actually like CarPlay.
Okay.
I'm learning now. But the screens are very nice, which I can't believe I'm saying, but the screens are very nice. The fact that this is not modern tech, but the panel roof is not problematic, as they have been in multiple of my cars. And it has the all-important heated steering wheel and heated seats at the very least, and cooled seats. But the heated seats, as soon as the temperature goes under 75, that baby's going on. So,
yeah. The funny thing to me was when after you found this car, you were like looking for reasons to not buy it, and you're messaging me.
Oh,
it was
my
like
God.
You called me, and you're messaging me, and it was like the things you were throwing out as suggestions. It was like a cry for help. You're like, what if I got a Stelvio Quattrofoglio? And you were,
I'm still not ruling that out.
I know you were looking at things, but one thing is that we are both accustomed to E-Class and E-Class interiors and a certain level of comfort and sort of niceties. And in a daily driver, we forego those. Our 911s are very stripped and bare bones and everything. So, but in a normal daily driver, it is nice to have like, and so even stepping down to like an Alfa Romeo interior might not be as good. Not even that it's objectively worse, but just that it's not, like, there is a comfort in going from one nice Mercedes interior to another nice Mercedes interior at the same level with more features and things.
It's weird. I mean, this makes us either sound old and or snobby, of
hopefully
which we
both.
Are both.
Yes.
And I hate to say it, but there is a part of me that thinks, oh, I can just put up with anything so long as, you know, it's an interesting car. But as far as like a daily driver goes, a car that you just get in to go get groceries, to go like wherever, it is really nice getting in, and this has soft closed doors. It has really nice like upholstery. It has what it is missing, which I do miss. I can't, you know, this is so dumb, but I really miss the Alcantara everything that the E63 had. Mm-hmm. Like the visors are basically pressed in place plastic. It's like one big plastic thing. It doesn't feel very nice. That's one of the only parts of the car that doesn't feel really nice. But and the E63 had like Alcantara wrapped sun visors, and then the tiny sun visor.
And if you use Covercraft as much as us, you're touching that visor a lot.
I'm touching that visor every day. So, but that said, like everything else about the car is really high quality. The metal buttons, the way they click. Also, that there are buttons is very important.
Yeah.
And it feels, and honestly, like the E-Class has a really nice ambient lighting. I know this is old news at this point, but I didn't think that I would be into that as much as I am. I've changed it from the rave blue that everyone has it set on and the wavy color feature, the multicolor feature where it kind of like waves. You pointed that out. I didn't even notice.
It was oscillating. It was like a fireplace. It was like the colors of a fireplace, like yellow, red, orange, flickering.
Yeah, I didn't even like notice that. I was just not paying attention to it. And so I just set it to a nice calm red. Is red calm?
No, it's not at all.
I guess like, yeah, that is typically
this explains why you're
warning.
Honking at people all the time. And
yeah,
raging.
I know. More so than usual.
Well, so your wagon was, you know, very uncomfortable on these terrible roads. Had those giant 19-inch wheels, performance tires. I assume it's more sensible, so you have a little bit of sidewall. It's a little bit more comfortable. Am I right?
Yeah. It's so much more comfortable on the smaller 20-inch wheels with run-flat P0s.
Oh, I thought they were 21s.
No, they aren't 21s, but 20 is not better. So
maybe if you had worked a little harder.
I know, yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, that's wild is that, like, on 20s, on run flats, it's a, still a very compliant car. Mm. I hit some bumps where it's, in the old car, it would have felt like the car was shattering. And in this car, only slightly shattering. All that said, I still, every single day, look for cars while I'm at the office, red on the toilet. And I still, like, I'm still doing my, like, regular daily car searches.
But you're not doing it under the gun. It's not stressful.
It's not stressful, yeah. And I think people should buy the E63. I think it's a, like, the 212, especially if you get, like, a sedan, it's a bargain. But you should do, you should buy it with the good maintenance at least halfway already done, because, you know, if basically you are stuck doing all of what the car might need, it adds up to a big bill that may not be worth it at the end of the day, because there are a lot of fast cars. There aren't a lot of cars, though, with that engine, though. I have to say that V8 was, yeah. I miss that noise a lot. And that was really growly. This car is more buzzy. It actually sounds, because it's a turbo inline six, it does at speed sometimes sound like a BMW, a modern BMW at least. So that's a for better or worse thing. At least it makes a noise, you know. That's part of the sacrifice here, is it does make noises. It does pops and bangs, which is not my favorite thing in the application of modern cars. It was cool when the F-Type came out, and now every single car does it.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's fine. Again, it's a normal car that does things sometimes, which is better than, like, my old 3 Series, which was, like, too much of a normal car, E91 wagon. So, we'll end it there, because this is a this is the conclusion of a very long conversation, literally years in the making, at the very least. So, yeah. Stay tuned for what bad decisions might... Oh, as a side note.
Yes.
One thing is that I forgot to... Or that we did mention is that this frees up my brain...
Oh, no.
...to make even worse decisions, though. Gosh. Which is a third car. Now I have mental capacity to return to a third car.
You're driving this one for free.
Yeah, this car I don't have to worry about. It starts every time. Doesn't, you know, doesn't need anything ever. And if it does, it's on, like, somebody else. So now I can look at old Range Rovers. Probably not. Not yet.
Volvos?
Volvos, maybe. 850 T5R. Do you remember when I wanted an Arnage?
I do remember
it
that.
It was a cry for help, and you did not...
I supported it.
You supported it. You were trying to push me over that cliff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did go looking for Turbo R's yesterday.
Ooh.
That would be really neat.
Was that what he had in Rushmore?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. So cool.
It's so cool. And they're so cheap, which I don't understand, because I'm sure they're very easy to maintain. I actually do hear they're not that bad to maintain. It's just that, like, one part is like $5,000, basically. So... We probably mentioned this on an old podcast, but when I think we did talk about the Arnage before, when I had, like, found one that was, like, silver with a blue interior.
Yeah, we were looking at the interior.
And then I went over Bat auctions, and they all, it's like a G-Wagon, basically, in which all of the window regulators need to be replaced all the time. And, like, if you get it replaced at the dealer, which a lot of people do, apparently, according to service records on Bat, it's almost $5,000 to replace and window regulator. Oof. At the dealership, at least.
Wow.
On to the next.
Yeah, very exciting.
Yeah.
Happy for this.
So, you wanted to talk about car diecast cars that you can recommend to a young, budding car enthusiast. And if I might make a suggestion.
Oh, yes.
Okay. To kick things off.
All right.
Of course, you and I, we have our collections. And I think it's the same collection that we would have had when we were kids, too, because we are the same dumb idiots who have not actually grown up or matured.
No, because I had a lot more, like, exotic cars I was a kid.
Oh, you did, yeah.
You know, I had, like, Ferrari F50 and various Ferraris and I don't remember what else. But you introduced me into... I mean, I have a lot of... The marketplace has changed with diecasts, whereas there's a lot more normie cars available. There's a lot more subdued, subtle cars and BMWs that were not the flashiest, but are cool to nerds like us. And that is, so that is like, that is cool how the market has changed. But yeah, I used to like build my dream supercar garage with models. Weird. And now it is, I like my like obscure 911 versions and things like that.
Do you know what my first diecast model was? It was a 1990 Lexus LS 400.
Oh my goodness.
My second one was an ML320 Maisto from Costco or something like that. So basically I was looking, I basically was forming my dreams around that of like a suburban yuppie couple.
Yes.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And basically every diecast following that, in my youth at least, kind of followed a very normie path. I don't think I ever owned a supercar of any kind. I still don't, like, as far as diecast goes, I don't think.
I mean, you have a 959.
Oh, yeah, there's a 959. Yeah. But it is one of the minor ones.
Yes,
it is a mini Champ.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, otherwise, I guess the 2000 GT, is that a supercar?
Classic. I don't know. Yeah.
Who classics knows? Are a different thing. Might I make a suggestion?
That's what we're here for.
Now that you have a youth of your own, have you made plans to impart a influence of some kind?
I think that like family and people around me will do that. I think that like as he gets older, people might give us cutesy like Porsche themed things because they don't know what to, they don't know what else. They know what I like.
What if your dad decided, you know, I had a Sonata. And they do have a Hyundai Sonata diecast, by the way.
Oh my god.
Yeah, although it might get stolen. So. Yeah, if you're not careful. It's funny that you mention Porsche things, because obviously people are going to push Porsche things onto your child.
Right.
There's no doubt about that. Say, for instance, I think that you should give this to your child.
Oh my god.
That's right, folks at home. You can't see this right now, but I'm presenting Kevin with what is a gift for his child.
This perhaps is really happening.
The first of many small cars that he might receive. Now, you have to describe to the folks what you're seeing here now.
Oh, my God. It is a Play Forever. It looks very fancy. It is a mini series. It says Luft, and it is a very cute sort of puffy 911-ish Targa.
Yeah, you have to open it up.
Oh yeah, this is so cool. I'm keeping this for me.
Yeah. So I wanted to have his name hand lettered on it with some sort of lead based paint, but then it was recommended to me to wait until he was older so that he could actually learn to lick the paint.
Is this a toy or a sculpture? This is so cool.
In the real world, of course, if someone were to have a Targa, we used to make fun of them.
We didn't like Targas.
But now we love Targas.
We do.
And while this is not technically completely anatomically correct, as there is no gold stripe that runs down the side from the Targa bar, it should be because it's kind of cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you so much. This is amazing.
Yeah. We'll post a picture of this.
Yeah. This is very cool.
Again, we love doing things on a medium in which visuals are very difficult to transcribe.
Yeah. It is a black sort of cartoony, like kind of in between a G model and a long hood. So it's kind of like a long hood. Very organic and like smooth resolved cartoon 911 shape with a gold Targa bar that runs down the side. Is very cool.
Our friend of the pod, Will, who draws figures like this, it's kind of like that.
It is, yeah. He draws like very anthropomorphic personified cars with like extreme cartoony proportions, like in motion, and you can get a sense of like the car almost like as a living thing stretching and moving, and as it like takes off
and
in motion.
Is what reminded me of that.
Oh my god.
I thought about getting like something like huge that he could ride on, but of course he is still a baby.
Yes.
And this would occupy space in your home until he could actually ride on it. So this seemed a bit more reasonable.
Oh, this is so cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. And then you have it.
What an apropos topic this is.
I know. Like, obviously, there's going to be a lot of German car pushing upon your child. And what if Dylan hates cars?
I mean,
what if he becomes a cyclist? Not what that there's if, anyone with bicycles, but...
The thing I wonder is, like, what if by that time, like, owning a gas car is, like, vilified?
This is why I... You know what? I thought about this the other day. I was watching that Frank Stephenson video of him basically decimating the XM, the BMW XM.
Oh, yeah.
And he kept asking, like, why is BMW doing this? Why is BMW doing this? And I sort of thought, like, I think they're doing this because they aren't trying to appeal to people today. I think they are trying to appeal to people who want to buy cars in the future, where you don't want, like, the things we want now. You want futuristic, Picasso-proportioned, like, weird-angled cars that look like they came out of video games. And maybe that's why. So in the future, your kid might want something that is a little bit... It's an abstract idea of what a car used to be, basically. It has wheels.
When you describe the XM, when you're saying something as an abstractive idea of what the car used to be, that is making the XM sound so much grander than it is.
I didn't mean for that. I didn't mean to compliment it in any way.
It's just an ugly car that sucks.
It's really ugly. You should watch this video because I have never seen him react so viscerally to a car before.
Wow.
You know, he obviously had designed several BMWs in the past, including the original X5.
Yeah.
And
the Mini.
And the Mini, yeah. And he makes, like, he basically, what most people look at the car and find offensive, he actually puts terms to, which is really interesting. And he draws lines, he follows lines, and he draws this, like, crazy grid. It looks like a collapsed graph paper situation. When you follow all the lines, they don't go anywhere. They just go all over the place, basically. So... it is a whole thing.
I meant from an environmental perspective. Like, what if one having a gas car is, this is like wearing a fur coat where it's like, you know, it's like, this is murder. Like, you know, and people throw paint at your car when you take it out.
So basically you're expecting to walk out to the garage to find your 911 splashed with what you hope is red paint.
I hope. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is a possibility. I thought about that, like, in the future when we go... I mean, at some point in time, my daily driver will likely be an EV of some kind, I think. So, you know, when gas does kind of dwindle to the point of being a slightly premium exotic substance, I don't know, will it be bad to have a gas-powered car of some kind? Or will it be, like, rare enough where, like, it's just kind of novel that you have this and you're kind of burning a small amount of a finite resource of what we have left. I guess the second part makes it sound even worse, but yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm biased. I think we're just brushing on this topic. This could be a full topic. I think with, like, old 911s, we're biased. We like them, but people seem to like them. It is, like, a charming, plucky looking car. Yeah. I think that is very different than if you had, like, A
vintage
modern
2024 Ford Raptor.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right about that. I mean, there's something like, you know, like a Duesenberg probably gets 0.5 miles per gallon. Yeah,
like people, like with our cars, people react to it even if they don't like cars. They still react to it. And no one is like, I hate that car.
Yeah.
Well, there's some people, but
I think a lot of
you don't look like, I don't know. I don't think that it's not like you look like an asshole in a brand new car that clearly cost $200,000.
Well, because they see like this is not so when we burn money on the car. It's literally just to keep it alive versus throwing it away on like a $180,000, you know, dash clock on a Bentley Bentayga or something like that.
Oh yeah, man.
So
I haven't ranted about that clock in so long.
I wonder if the clock is worth more than the car is now.
Probably.
It could be.
And what if people buy it without it, and can they upgrade it later?
You mean buy the clock now and upgrade to the car later?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a possibility.
Okay.
Will that ever be a cool car? Probably not, because... okay, you know how like Rolls Royces, except for the Phantom and anything modern, so maybe this won't apply, but old Rolls Royces are really cheap. Will a Cullinan ever be a charming, cheap thing? Because as we've discussed in a previous podcast, I've come to the conclusion that I don't hate the Cullinan. Like, I kind of like that it's this big Victorian house on wheels.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the future, should it ever be a $15,000 car, which I don't think it'll ever be. I don't think new Rolls Royces will ever be.
Yeah, I don't think they ever will be.
Yeah.
Isn't I don't know strange? Why that is.
I don't either, because, yeah, you can buy like a Silver Spur or something for under, I'm sure, under 15 grand, if not less than that.
Yeah.
So, and old Bentleys, same thing.
Right.
But Bentleys do depreciate. Like all the, is it because they are based on, a lot of them are based on normie cars?
Right, but I mean, I feel like, maybe I'm way off, but if you wanted like, I don't think you can find a Continental GT under like 50.
No. Like the original one?
Yeah.
No, you can buy those for like 30, if not less. Okay. So that's the, like, as far as like a modern-ish Bentley.
Why do you feel like they made a zillion of those?
They made a zillion of them, and I'm certain, I mean, these were probably technologically related to like the Phaeton. And
yeah, it was.
Other things that were not known for easy upkeep.
Right.
Although I do believe we know of a few people who have Phaetons that have kept them alive online, that is.
Yeah, I think the Phaeton, I think they always said the Phaeton was closest to a Continental GT because the A8, which you would think would be closest to a Phaeton, was aluminum.
Yeah, and you could get a W12.
In all of them.
In all of them, yeah. And that said, though, I mean, I'm curious, like maybe it's not that bad, but it probably is.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I see what you mean, like a ghost. In 10 years, it's not. It's still going to probably have a premium, and it's not going to be cheaper to... I don't think a Ghost in 10 years will be cheap to run.
No.
Just as a Silver Seraph from 2000 is not going to be cheap to run.
Yeah. I mean, considering like the Phantom from the early
Phantom
aughts,
really holds its value.
It's it's still solid. Like, the worst one is still $100,000.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it's such a unique car. I mean, and so that's cool. Part of it. And I think it's on a unique platform, and it's completely bespoke. So, but then the old ones kind of were too. So, but they weren't necessarily good cars.
No.
They were just exclusive.
It was just a weirdo choice.
It was just a weirdo choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you could, you know, a Mercedes S-Class was probably actually a better luxury car.
Objectively. Yeah. So much better.
So maybe that's the difference, that they actually have put the money into it, and now it's actually holding value.
But I don't know that a Ghost is good.
Yeah, that's probably true. I don't know.
I don't think a Ghost could be good.
Yeah. I mean, they use them for... you don't see them around, and I feel like they made a lot of them in the 80s.
What? No, I'm talking about the current Ghost.
Oh. Oh, okay.
The bad one.
Okay.
I'm saying the Ghost isn't good.
Okay, I have no opinion on them.
I mean, I think the Phantom is amazing. I think it's incredible. I think the Ghost looks just like a knockoff of it.
Oh, you're talking about like
the one that's a 7 Series.
The assistant manager's.
The assistant manager's Rolls Royce. I don't like those, but they still hold value.
They hold value. Yeah. I guess because I'm gonna say like it's because of the internet, like the web. And social media, and now anything Rolls Royce, anything new Rolls Royce is probably going to hold value. But then that said, like, Bentley should kind of be the same, but they aren't holding up value at all. So.
But they made so many more.
Yeah.
And Bentley had a quote-unquote cheap car, like a sub-$200,000 car. It's not cheap, but they had a sub-$200,000 car for a full decade before Rolls Royce did.
Yeah, that's true.
Because... you know, if you look at the post 2000 era for both companies, like Rolls Royce only had the Phantom until they had the Ghost in the mid 2010s.
Yeah, yeah.
And Rolls Royce has had cheaper cars since the beginning of the millennium.
Yeah.
With the Continental GT 2-door and 4-door. So that is.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll look at like used listings for those because it seems like a lot of car for the money, and it is.
Which one?
The Continental GT.
Oh, yeah.
2 and 4-door.
Sure.
The 2-door is a little too, like, leisure lifestyle. The 4-door, I think is the rare one.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
And is kind of interesting. I mean, that's, again, basically
those taillights look cool on the sedan.
Yeah.
Like, I think the rear is interesting.
Yeah. You know what the GT coupe reminds me of is those huge American luxury coupes from, like, the 80s, where it's just, like, this big, fluffy car.
The Continental GT coupe?
Yeah. The original one. The original one. To me. But the sedan looks cool.
It hasn't
changed
much. Oh, you're talking about, like, the 90s one?
No. I'm talking about, like, the early 2000s.
The VW one.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I think that's got to be a car up there with the i8, like, most likely to be wrapped and owned by a nightclub owner.
Well, considering that, like, yeah, you can buy one for, like, $30,000 easily all day long now. And yeah, absolutely. I wonder if those are very short-lived ownership experiences, though. Like, as soon as, like, the first mechanical thing that goes wrong with it, it is dumped.
Probably.
It's also on, like, full air, obviously. And oh, yeah. So I would imagine, I'm sure if we went down to Houston's Hammock District, where this is the district that we refer to, it is basically, like, the cluster of all of the shops, the mechanic shops, body shops, whatever. And if you were to go down there, there's usually a lot of collapsed air suspension cars there. So, including, do you remember that Citroen DS that is always there?
Yes.
But I don't know if it's collapsed on its haunch. It looks cool. Like, yeah. It's slammed, basically. So maybe, and that's not air. That's a hydraulic suspension. But it never moves. So I wonder if it too needs... It probably does. It is a French car, so...
Yeah, it's in the Hammock District.
It's in the Hammock District, after all.
What other topic do we have?
I guess we're done with this topic. Lincoln LS. Lincoln Luxury Sedan.
Jaguar S-Type. Do you remember the Lincoln LS6 versus LS8 controversy?
I do, because I thought that was... In my kid brain, I was like, whoa, they're going to call it the 6 and the 8, because one has a 6-cylinder and one has an 8-cylinder.
Yeah.
And I thought that was wild. And
Toyota was mad. Because they weren't allowed to use T150.
Yeah, so they got them back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Lincoln LS. Imitation BMW front.
Yeah.
And
Mitsubishi Diamante rear. Yeah.
And the best iteration, of course, was the Thunderbird.
Ooh. Wasn't it like the LS, the Thunderbird, the S-Type, and then the later, like, 2005 Mustang were all the same platform?
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. I did not know that.
I think so.
That all way off. Blends to me. That was a side blurb on Car and Driver, and I'm sure I glossed over it.
The Lincoln LS was weird because it was a sports sedan. Predated, like, the Cadillac CTS. Like, that first CTS was like Cadillac's, like, we're doing rear wheel drive sports sedan. We're going to take on the Europeans.
Revisionist history much? What about the Caddy that zigs?
Okay, but that was. It looked like a Malibu.
Yeah.
No one... It was the most front-wheel drive looking rear-wheel drive car ever made.
Yes, and until, honestly, the 2010s, I did not know that it was on a rear-wheel drive platform.
No one did. No one did.
I literally thought that it was a Malibu.
Yeah.
Rebadged.
Yeah, so the LS was like a proper attempt to go after BMW. It was, and by proper, I mean it was terrible, but it was a real effort. What a confused time for the company, I guess.
Yeah, I would say so. They had, like, good ideas that never panned out.
Yeah.
You remember the Ford 500? Not the real one, but the original concept.
Oh, the concept was cool. Yeah. I remember the real one.
And then I remember the real one, and that just became, like the police detective's car, not the lowly police cruiser, which was just the Taurus.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess it was a Taurus.
Well...
No, wait.
Oh, okay. We're going deep into it. It's Forrester rules. You cannot look at Wikipedia.
Yeah.
The way I recall, and I don't know how the 500 came about, but the way I remember it is the Taurus was gone. It was replaced by the 500. It was a very boring looking car.
Yeah.
And then Alan Mulally, CEO from Boeing. Megastar CEO at Ford came in. And said, what are we doing? What is this 500 bullshit? Like, you bring back the Taurus.
Yeah.
And so they had the like new 2009 Taurus on the way.
Okay.
And they renamed the 500 the Taurus for like one outgoing model year before the new Taurus came.
I can't believe I don't know this, because I used to be, in the 90s at least, when the good Tauruses were around, Tauri, I used to be such a big fan. So I knew like...
What are you referring to as the good Taurus?
Like first gen and second gen, and okay. That's it.
Pre-oval.
So, pre-ovoid.
Okay.
Even though I do think the oval is charming now.
Absolutely.
But I would never own one, of course.
No.
But beyond that, like, yeah, basically after ovoid Taurus, I don't know anything. Like, in my brain, I can kind of see, like, when it morphed into a normal-looking car, it was still the same car, like, in the 2000s Taurus, a turn-of-the-millennium one, was the same as the 96 Taurus, but they had, like, straightened out everything.
Yeah, yeah, they kind of course-corrected and made it boring.
Yeah.
I had a friend in college who had an Arena Red.
Whoa.
Facelift Taurus.
Okay. Here's the... Oh, the facelift.
The facelift, the bad one.
I was like, going to say, the show, the ovoid show...
Oh, man. Oh, man.
In red looked actually kind of not bad.
Okay, I was Googling yesterday. I was looking at pictures of those. I forgot, I think on later... Pre-facelift, but later shows, they got rid of the heck blend. Like, the bridge
really?
Between the taillights just on the show was body color.
Wait, really?
Yes.
Okay. You think you'd...
The black connector.
Since they don't exist anymore, we have no way of verifying
there's
this.
There's no way to verify, but we'll post about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am trying to think back in period. So that's... You know one other car that did this? This is just kind of very obscure, but do you recall at all the first-gen Gijaro-designed GS, Lexus GS?
Sure, yeah.
So it had like a...
It was like a 300ZX-style rear light.
Yeah, and then I think they filled it in with a body-colored one. It was still there, like the heck blend, heck and blade, as I like to call it, was still there. I really did think for the longest time in my head it was like heck and blade.
There's hundreds of hours that prove you are correct, yes. That you did think that, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So just side note to that, mm-hmm. I just remember that because I was obsessed with the GS when it first came out.
Yeah.
I thought it was actually, like, it was a really beautiful...
Sure.
Luxury sedan.
Yeah.
Or what does GS stand for? Grand sedan? Great sedan?
I don't know.
Good sedan.
Good sedan.
Yeah. So good sedan 300. That car looked really nice. Anyways. Yeah,
it did. So what you're saying, they filled in the heck blend on a facelift, but
before the big facelift.
Big facelift.
Which
the
is
quad
the
headlight.
Quad eye.
Yeah, yeah, the quad eye.
Something wicked this way comes.
Exactly.
Yeah. So back to the Taurus.
Yeah.
When it became the Taurus again. So there was there nothing in between? There was one more model, right? In between ovoid and the 500 turn Taurus.
I think the facelift Taurus lasted way longer than you think it did.
Probably.
I think it lasted till like 2005 or 6.
I'm sure it wasn't even available for sale to consumers. It was like rental agency only.
Hertz special.
Yeah.
Hertz. Which rental car was like Ford affiliated? Was it Hertz?
Was it Hertz? Because they had the Mustang, the Shelby.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
And
like, I think Ford had a stake in them. So it was like lots of Fords.
Yeah. Is Hertz the one that's like being called out right now for like stealing back customer cars and then calling the police on them?
I don't know.
Okay, it's one of these things.
Sounds like a good bit, though.
Yeah, there's an article like every few months about... It's either Hertz or something else, I forget. But yeah, that's basically it. They're just like... Because everything's just run through computers and the employees don't care. The computer like somehow gets the car... I don't think it's the computers. I think it's just like bad bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. The cars get like taken back because they're reported as taken out beyond whatever return period. And then... The owners get the police called on them, or not the owners, the renters get the police called on them, something like that. It's really crazy. Do you remember
this a segment called Chris Summarizes News Stories loosely?
Yeah, this is a lot better than me describing paintings audibly, orally. So that's a different podcast.
Brochures.
Yeah, that's a different podcast. I mean, this happened to you with Toro.
I've had my Toro.
You had your Toro repossessed.
Sure, yeah.
Basically.
Yes.
But you never did find the answer to...
I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you made a whole video about this
That was what found the answer.
Okay.
Was that it was repossessed.
Okay. Oh, it was.
Yeah.
That was the whole thing.
That was the thing. I thought it was like towed or stolen or something, but because I made the video,
yeah,
someone reached out to Turo, or the drive reached out to Turo, and Turo actually gave them the answer they wouldn't give to me, and it was that it was repossessed.
Okay, that's right. Well, color me embarrassed. I just got called out on pretending to have watched your video, but fast forwarded to the very end.
I'm used to it.
Yeah. So there you go. The Taurus discussion. I don't know how it went down to there, but...
Well, started with the Lincoln LS. And
Lincoln LS.
Naturally.
And now the Taurus is gone yet again, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because they don't make any sedans.
Yeah, they don't make any sedans.
No sedans anymore, except for... No, not even for fleet use even.
No.
So there you have it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be a podcast.
I think so.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening. Do follow us on Instagram at new496. Email us if you must. What is it, Kevin?
I don't. It's new496.
AOL.com.
The numbers are spelled out. It's at Gmail.
Yes. Well, see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.